Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Bob Oakes, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After the mortgage debacle threw the country into a tailspin, a new government agency was formed to steer the country away from the kinds of abuses that led to the 2009 recession. Now the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, whose mission it is to watch out for us, is having to watch its own back from challenges in the Senate and in the court. This hour, On Point, the battle over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau heats up. You can join the conversation. Did you cheer the creation of a government body to protect consumers, or think of it as one more government agency and more government overreach? You can comment on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Danielle Douglas, who's been covering the battle over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau for the Washington Post. Danielle, thanks for joining us here on Point.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Can you remind us, Danielle, how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau came into being?
Well, Elizabeth Warren, who's now the senator from Massachusetts, actually was the architect of the Consumer Bureau back in 2010 and worked with the administration to develop the idea. From the outside, there was a lot of conflict as to how the Bureau would be structured and just the basic existence of another regulatory agency pose a bit of an issue to many folks who thought that the framework for regulation was already pretty thick and would add to more stress for the financial sector and for businesses.
Well, what measures has it passed since it came into being that would protect consumers?
Well, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has a great database that allows consumers to send in complaints about their mortgages or how they are dealing with their servicers or their credit card companies. The Bureau has also issued two enforcement actions, one against Capital One for deceptive marketing practices in the way that they were selling some of their credit card products. And then one of the other things that they've done, which the industry has been waiting for a while, is instituted a set of mortgage servicing rules and mortgage lending rules, which were written last month, about seven of them. And so far, they've received pretty good response from both the industry as well as consumer groups.
So are the mortgage regulations then, are you saying, supported by the industry?
Thus far, they are. The Bureau took a pretty moderate approach to writing the rules and was in conversations with all industry players as well as lobbying groups and consumer groups to try to find some kind of common ground. Now, don't get me wrong, there are still points that are under debate on both sides, but initially the reaction from both industry and consumer groups was that they were happy with the direction that the agency took for these very complex rules that will change the face of mortgage lending.
I'll get to the fight over the current director of the Bureau, Richard Cordray, in a moment. But first, I want to ask you to fast forward to right now. A group of 43 Republican senators have asked for key structural changes to the Bureau before considering any nominee. What are they?
Well, this is the exact same fight that led to the recent appointment of Cordray back in 2011. There are about 43 Republicans who have said that they will not appoint anyone unless the Bureau has to start going through Congress for their annual appropriation. Right now, they go through the Treasury. They also want, instead of one director, they'd like a five-member commission with Republican and Democratic appointees and perhaps a chairman at the helm, similar to the way the FDIC is run or the SEC is run. The other issue is they feel that there's not enough supervision of the agency, not enough audits and the like, and they want to kind of rein in on some of that perceived power.
They say it's an organization that has almost no oversight.
They say that, but the truth of the matter is that the Financial Stability Board could actually overrule much of anything that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau does, as can Congress. And the Bureau does operate with a statutory cap on its funding, so there are measures in place in order to oversee its boundaries.
So how would the changes the Republican senators want and are demanding affect the operations of the Financial Consumer Bureau?
Well, some advocates of the Bureau fear that it would likely cut the Bureau's funding in half, and they would pretty much starve them out of existence, in the sense that much like the CFTC is operating on a depleted budget and as a result just does not have the same kind of enforcement power as they would if they had their full budget at hand. And the commission, I think it's interesting because the argument can be made that the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, has one single director, and it's not unprecedented for that structure to exist and to exist in an efficient way. And if you look at the SEC, which has a commission in place, there's often deadlock and a lot of things don't necessarily go through, so there is concern there.
So, Danielle, what's your view? What do you hear from Republicans on why they're concerned about a strong consumer bureau? Which, of course, they say they want consumer protection, but the critics of their actions say that what they really fear is a strong consumer bureau.
Well, I don't think we could find any Republicans who would say that they're against consumer protection. And their argument is that we just want to ensure that this agency doesn't have broad power that supersedes many of the regulatory powers in place. There's an argument that can be made for that, but at the same time, with the existing regulatory framework that we had before the Consumer Bureau, there were a lot of abuses that ran rampant, and a lot of consumers suffered for that, as we saw during the financial crisis.
There are the critics of the Republican actions in this matter say that it's simply a matter of the fact that these same Republicans are getting big campaign contributions from big banks. Certainly is a lot of money floating around out there.
There definitely is, and, you know, arguably to some extent on both sides, but certainly the financial industry, it has its favorites within the Republican Party. I mean, I don't know whether that is a motivation in this instance. If you take the Republicans at their word, they are more concerned with the structure and what it would mean for business career, for job creation, and for the ability of businesses to thrive, especially coming out of the recession and trying to maintain the recovery.
All right. Now the legal fight over Richard Cordray and ultimately perhaps the entire Bureau. And I'll just do a quick timeline here. In January of 2012, the president appointed Cordray, the former attorney general of Ohio, to lead the Bureau as director. It was a 2-year recess appointment. In January 2013, President Obama nominated Cordray to a full 5-year term. But the next day, a federal appeals court ruled that a different set of recess appointments were not proper and they were nullified. So Cordray's appointment is also being challenged in court. If it's nullified, it not only might he be ousted, but so might all the regulations he put into place. And then just a couple of weeks ago, 43 Republicans signed that letter that we already talked about opposing Cordray, saying changes must first be made to the Credit Bureau, and they expect to filibuster his nomination on the Senate floor if they had to. Just a little bit of more background from you, if I can. The Federal Appeals Court decision about recess appointments had nothing to do with Cordray. It was about three appointments to the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. So how might it affect Cordray?
Well, there, like you mentioned, there is another case that's in court right now that's using the exact same constitutional argument in order to say that Cordray should not be appointed to the directorship. So the fact that the three appointees under the National Labor Relations Board faced a possible threat of being stripped of their position, because remember, this can go to the Supreme Court. It's going to take years before we necessarily see any kind of movement on this case, but it still could serve as the basis for similar action in Cordray's case. The one thing is that some of his duties could fall back on Treasury in order to take over, in order to continue to keep the rules in place. However, the idea of any lawsuit kind of opening the gate to the potential flood of other lawsuits that could try to challenge the mortgage rules, as we discussed earlier, and some of the enforcement actions, any of those things, are now all on the table.
So you're saying that all of the regulations that Cordray has put into place could be nullified if he's gone too, if his appointment is nullified by an appeals court?
It's possible, but a lot of the supervisory actions that the Bureau has would, could revert to the Treasury Department. So it's not necessarily that the Bureau will shut down entirely, but the, a lot of the more critical rules that have been in place since the director came into his position are threatened at this point.
So you mentioned the Supreme Court. Is it likely, in your view, that the White House will take this appeals court ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court?
It's hard to tell at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, the president stands by his decision, and I know that with the Republicans asking for changes in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the White House has said that they want to keep the Bureau independent. And I take that as a sign of not necessarily wanting to budge on this issue, because the overarching concern is making sure that you have the strongest Bureau and agency in place in order to protect consumers. So I doubt that they would allow this ruling to set precedent to threaten the gains of this agency.
So I'm going to let you go in a second here, Danielle, but I do want to ask you to politically handicap this for us. Is it an uphill fight in your view now to save Cordray and this agency?
It's going to be difficult. You know, on Valentine's Day, there were 52 Democrats and two independents that sent their own letters to the president. And they essentially said they're not going to compromise. And they've asked the president not to change the structure of the Bureau and not to, I guess, you know, concede to any of the Republican demands. So we have this very clear line in the sand, and it does not look like anyone wants to come to it's any kind of compromise. So it's uncertain to say what we're going to see here. But what we do know is Richard Cordray's appointment expires at the end of this year.
This is On Point. I'm Bob Oakes, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking today about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau under attack. Joining us now, two new voices from Washington, Ed Mierzwinski, Federal Consumer Program Director for U.S. PIRG, a consumer advocacy group. Hi, Ed. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Bob.
Also with us in Washington is Diane Katz, a Research Fellow of Regulatory Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Ed, let's start with you. Make the case for the Bureau and for Richard Cordray. Why should the Bureau stay as empowered as it is, and why is Cordray the right person to lead it if you think he is?
Well, first of all, on Rich Cordray, it's very simple that none of the senators challenge his qualifications. They say that he is an outstanding leader and very well qualified. On the merits of their fight, I think they have no merits to either of their fights. First, the CFPB was a response to the biggest financial collapse since 1929. It was clearly brought on by unfair financial practices, and then it exploded into a collapse of the entire economy when banks sold those badly made mortgages on the investment markets. So it was a mess. Congress needed a remedial law. Now you've got a group of senators who are saying, we lost the fight over how to deal with Wall Street reform. And for the very first time in history, according to the Senate historian and according to PolitiFact has confirmed this, for the very first time in history, they want to deny a qualified director his job because they want to change the law. They want to relitigate the creation of the CFPB. And now they're doubling down based on a radical, very radical decision by one appellate court that conflicts with other appellate courts and unsettles 200 years of settled practice of recess appointments. They're just wrong on the merits. They're wrong on the law. They're wrong on the facts. The CFPB is a critical response to the collapse of the American economy, and it's working well. We shouldn't play with the people's pocketbooks. We shouldn't harm consumers by letting this uncertainty continue.
All right, Diane Katz, you've called the Bureau, the CFPB, which I'm simply calling the Bureau today, one of the most powerful and unaccountable federal agencies ever created. How so? Explain your objections.
Well, the structure of the CFPB represents a radical departure from longstanding regulatory standards. The Bureau is set to regulate virtually the entire financial sector without defined and predictable standards or oversight. And government involvement in this way in the financial market brings consequences, and that is that the CFPB's actions are constricting the availability of financial products and services. There is no evidence that a lack of consumer protection was a major contributor to the financial crisis. The housing collapse was fundamentally the result of a bubble, and most economists agree that it was flawed monetary policy that drove excessive demand for higher risk investments. And so at the same time, government policy was pushing creditors to lend to ever riskier buyers. And at the same time, taxpayers were insuring these riskier loans. And so, yes, it was a mess, but it wasn't a mess because of a lack of consumer protections. The CFPB does not address the real causes of the financial crisis. But the flaws of the Bureau in its structure and its operations and the lack of accountability will produce more harm than benefit for consumers, including higher costs of credit and fewer choices.
So supporters of the Bureau say the argument that it's unaccountable are just specious, considering that it's funded the same way as other bank regulators, that its decisions are subject to veto by other agencies, as our reporter from the Washington Post told us just a few minutes ago, and that having only one director is the same organization structure as, say, the comptroller of the currency. Respond to that, Diane.
Sure. Let's get specific. Many departments and agencies are headed by single directors, but they serve at the pleasure of the president, and that's not the case with the directorship of the CFPB. Secondly, independent agencies are typically headed by commissions. Now, there are some financial regulatory agencies that do fall outside the appropriations process, but they're exceptions rather than the rule. And the big difference is that they typically supervise what's called safety and soundness. They don't possess the broad policymaking powers that the CFPB does. And the CFPB director has really unparalleled authority over all types of consumer credit. And that's a cornerstone of the U.S. economy. And so the powers that the director enjoys are unlike any other powers, and therefore, and as is the structure. And so therefore, the combination of the two represent, you know, a considerable threat.
Ed Mierzwinski, why don't you weigh in here, and then we'll speak to some on-point listeners who've been waiting patiently to talk. Go ahead, Ed.
Sure, Bob, and I don't really know where to start here, but I think that there is an attempt to change the narrative of what everyone in America lived through in 2008 and 2009, which was a spectacular financial collapse, not brought on by lending to more and more riskier people, but brought on by greed and companies that were unregulated. It was a lack of regulation of the housing market and the financial marketplace more broadly that led to this spectacular collapse. People are afraid to open their 401ks because they read like Stephen King novels. People are out of jobs. People have lost their homes. And the CFPB is a response to that. And as you pointed out, and as Danielle Douglas pointed out, it is simply not unique in its structure or the powers of its director. It is very similar to the other bank regulators, and it is a bank regulator. So it deserves to go on the way it does. It should not have its funding subject to the incredibly politicized congressional appropriations process that has choked off the ability of many of the other regulators to protect the public, whether it's the SEC in the investment markets, the CFTC in the derivatives markets, the two financial regulators who are already under congressional control, or the other consumer regulators, the FTC and the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which routinely are attacked whenever they try to protect the public from needless risks and harms. So keep the CFPB the way it is.
All right. Let's talk to On Point listeners. Bernie's on the line from Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Bob. How are you? Say, thanks for taking my call. I believe the Consumer Protection Agency is something that will turn out to be extremely important as we go into the future. I've been in business for 40 years, And my observation has been that any small business from $1,000 to $5 million will all, and going into the Wall Street to the hundreds of millions, will look for a way to make an extra dollar from the consumer and by taking advantage of them or being deceitful. And therefore, this consumer protection agency should turn out to be something that will help the average person on Main Street. And the the collapse of the housing market is really been given a bad name, the housing industry. It was really the collapse of the and unregulation of the financial industry, starting with the mortgage bankers who opened storefronts everywhere that they could during the time period, and then washed themselves of it by sending all those the bad mortgages to Wall Street, where they packaged them as AAA and sold them. And that's what really brought down the housing market. The housing market really didn't, in my opinion, bring itself down. It was brought down by Wall Street and greed.
All right. Bernie, thanks a lot. Diane Katz, let me get you to respond to the first thing that Bernie was talking about there, his belief that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is something that's absolutely needed to protect consumers from the predatory practices, in his view, of businesses, including small businesses. What do you say to that?
There's no lack of laws on the books and regulations on the books for consumer protection. In fact, the CFPB basically inherited some 50 rules and orders from 18 consumer protection laws that that previously had been divided among seven agencies. So the idea that there was no regulation of consumer protection is false. But he raises an interesting point, which is, what are the effects on small businesses and of this type of regulation? And what we do know is that regulations always benefit the big players at the expense of smaller independent firms. And in the same way, regulations like those that are coming out of CFPB will have a disproportionate effect on those who are in the lower income brackets compared to those who are in the higher income brackets. You know, the financial products and services, of course, would be safer if they were very simple and all the same, standardized. But, and that's the direction the Bureau is going in, but that reduces credit options and it limits customizing credit. And it basically means that those with higher incomes who are the least risky will have complete uninhibited access, and those at the lower end of the income scale will have much fewer choices. So people with lower incomes will be forced to rely on even riskier off-the-grid types of access to credit.
So just so I'm clear on this, are you saying get rid of the CFPB, get rid of the Bureau altogether?
I'm saying don't get rid of consumer protection, but the Bureau needs structurally to be reined in, and there needs to be some other operational reforms, including defining its powers. Right now it has unlimited powers to define what it considers to be a risk or what it considers to be abusive. Congress passed the buck on this, and they basically said, as they did in much of Dodd-Frank, here's the problem, do something about it.
All right. Paul is calling from Panama City, Florida. Hi, Paul. You're on Point.
Hi, Bob. I have a question, but first let me say I'm still shocked that we're even considering the Community Reinvestment Act as a contributing factor to the crash. It makes absolutely no sense to me, because Wall Street firms would not have made hundreds of billions of dollars because the government forced them to do it. But getting to my question, I'm a Blue Dog Democrat, so I recognize the need for regulation, but I'm also concerned about bloated government. The question is this: why did the administration choose to initiate a new bureau instead of expanding the powers and reforming the bureaus that already existed? And I'll listen off air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Paul, calling from Panama City, Florida. Ed, why don't you take that? Ed Mears-Winsky.
Well, first, Bob, the caller is absolutely correct. Even the Federal Reserve Board has said the CRA, which encourages reinvestment in the communities where banks take deposits, had nothing to do with the financial collapse. It was Wall Street shenanigans. Second, the CFPB was intended to protect us across the entire financial marketplace, wherever we bought or purchased financial products, both banks and non-banks. Third, there was a conflict of interest among the current bank regulators. So if you gave each of them more power, you weren't solving the conflict of interest, which tended to lead to a race to the bottom. Banks would choose their charter class, whether they were state banks or federal banks or national or savings and loans, depending on which bank regulator offered them the best deal, which was always the worst deal for consumers. They cannot run and hide from the CFPB. So we created a new regulator that is not beholden to the banks. It's the only federal financial regulator with one job, protecting consumers.
Diane, respond.
Respond to that. Sure. You can't say on the one hand that the CFPB is no different than any other financial regulator, and then say on the other hand that this is a far different bureau or regulatory agency than we've ever had before. It's got to be one or the other. CFPB was conceived of in the same vein as something like the Consumer Product Safety Commission that regulates against things like unsafe toasters, right? You don't want a financial product that's going to blow up like a toaster might blow up if it's unsafe. But the difference is that all consumer financial products and services are safe for at least a niche of the market, or at least some consumers they're useful for. And so it's not like there's inherent danger in a consumer product or service if it is marketed to a consumer who can benefit from it. Now, this idea that that the CFPB is going to protect us all is kind of a dangerous type of outlook. We should not be relying upon the government to protect us from our own actions. But the CFPB is largely driven by this idea that consumers are incapable of making rational choices.
You've written, Diane, that the CFPB is the essence of the nanny state. Is that what you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Ed, go ahead.
Oh, I just have to completely disagree. We have rules in place to keep your toaster from exploding. We should have similar rules, to continue the analogy that was originally from Professor Warren. We should also have rules in place to keep your mortgage from blowing up your financial house. The idea that we can have choices in the financial marketplace but not minimum floors of protection is a specious argument that's really dangerous to consumers. We don't allow any car on the road. We don't say that, well, poor people should drive cars with no brakes. All cars must have brakes. It's very simple. The CFPB is the same. I don't consider payday lending in an unregulated marketplace to be a fair choice for consumers. Payday lending is unsustainable. There is no consumer that it will benefit. The CFPB hasn't yet banned it, but it has broad authority to regulate it.
And yet, payday lending is a huge business out there because people need it.
People don't need payday lending. People see payday lending as their only choice, and the CFPB is working very, very hard to come up with other choices for consumers.
This is On Point. I'm Bob Oakes, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking today about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is under attack. We're talking with Ed Mierzwinski, Federal Consumer Program Director for USPIRG, a consumer advocacy group, and Diane Katz, Research Fellow of Regulatory Policy at the Heritage Foundation. A lot of debate about this up on Capitol Hill, Republicans and Democrats going at each other in just the last couple of weeks. In a news conference last Wednesday, Democratic Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown chastised Republicans for demanding changes to the Bureau.
This is only the second time in Senate history that anyone can find where someone who is considered qualified is where one political party has kept someone out of office, refused to confirm them for a position who they acknowledge is qualified because they don't like the agency which he would lead.
And Rhode Island Democrat Senator Jack Reed also last Wednesday in a news conference called on Republicans to confirm Richard Cordray, who Senator Brown was talking about there, for a new term as the Bureau Director.
We should allow the CFPB to do its job. Assessments from the gentleman and from Consumer Reports that I mentioned are indications they are doing the job. We have to move forward, confirm Mr. Cordray, and let the CFPB do the job it was designed to do.
Now, we don't have any tape of any Republicans speaking, but I do have in front of me the letter that Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell and dozens of other Republicans sent to the president on February 1st, in which he said, as supporters of strong and effective consumer protections, we write to reaffirm our concerns over the transparency and accountability of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We have serious concerns about the lack of congressional oversight of the agency and the lack of normal democratic checks on its sole director, who would wield nearly unprecedented powers. Accordingly, we'll continue to oppose the consideration of any nominee, regardless of political affiliation, until key structural changes are made to ensure accountability and transparency at the CFPB. That letter again to President Obama from Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell just a few days ago. Let's come back to our guest now, Diane Katz. Let me ask you, are you concerned about some of the changes the Bureau has implemented in the financial market so far? Has the Bureau been too heavy-handed in its dealings? And if so, how so? And I ask the question mindful that something on the order of 500 pages of new regulations just to protect people in the mortgage industry have been written so far by the agency.
You know, it would be nice if it was only 500 pages. You know, the problem tends to be that here that there's a micromanaging of financial products and services. That is that rather than setting standards in terms of, anti-fraud or necessity for disclosure, the Bureau is actually designing specific mortgage products and services. For example, the Bureau released a proposal for more what they called consumer-friendly mortgage processes, and the requirements to implement the new rules ran more than 1,000 pages. Now, you've got to ask yourself, what is that going to do to all but the biggest providers of mortgage lending? It's going to really hit them, and that's going to raise costs and reduce the availability of these products. Rather than empower consumers through disclosure, the Bureau has taken the position, actually, that too much information, and this is their words, has the potential to detract from consumers' decision-making. So what they're saying is that they want consumers to get even less information than they were getting before. The 500 pages of proposed rules you may have been referring to have to do with mortgage servicing. And again, that's going to fall hardest on community banks and lower-end borrowers. So that's only in the area of mortgage lending. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has regulatory authority over credit bureaus, education loans, overdraft policies, payday lenders, credit card plans, prepaid cards, you name it. If your money's not under the mattress, it's now under the control of the Bureau.
Ed, I know you have a butt here because I know that you've written and said that the finance industry knows that Richard Cordray and the Bureau have been fair and balanced. What do you mean?
Well, I think it's very clear that the industry is somewhat appreciative of the way that the Bureau has been open and honest and has issued rules that seem to take into account all of their concerns. They can get meetings with Director Cordray. They can get meetings with all of his staff. And by the way, a couple of points here. A lot of those mortgage rules were required by the law. The CFPB was ordered to put those out. So they had to put them out. And a lot of the pages are background and explanatory material. But in addition to that, the CFPB also has yet another check and balance that it has to go out to small businesses before it issues rules and see what the impact of the rule might be on them. And the CFPB also, while its rules apply to small banks, it does not have its full power over small banks and community banks and credit unions. That power rests with their remaining prudential regulators. So they all would be under the same rules, but the CFPB is not going to go knocking on their door the way it will on the big banks.
A couple of comments on Twitter. One saying that the CFPB is pandering to the public as the cheaters continue to cheat. Can you say it's a smokescreen? Another one says, I don't buy the cover. Government policy pushes companies to throw consumers' best interests to the wind. A comment from our website, onpointradio.org. Melanie Wilson, so sad that consumer protection has become politicized to this degree. Creating a five-member board? Ridiculous. That would be the ultimate step in delegitimizing what's supposed to be an objective, nonpartisan effort to rein in abuses that are already illegal. Elaine is on the line from Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Bob. I take issue with Diane because she feels that, or at least the impression I get, is that the population of the United States has a PhD or even higher sophisticated knowledge of finance markets. And that's not true. We have a poor education system, a poor finance education system, and the population is getting elderly. And these are... those situations are very difficult to understand. Mortgages, investments, credit cards especially can really schnooker you. So I do feel that the Bureau is definitely necessary. It may need some fine-tuning as far as the rules and regulations, but it is clearly the thing that we need right now.
Diane, since Elaine was taking issue with you, you get to respond.
Sure. I'm not saying that we don't need consumer financial protections. What we need, though, is sensible policy that, you know, sound regulation would balance consumer protection against other benefits from competition, lower prices, a broader array of alternatives. That's not what's going on here at the CFPB. All financial transactions involve some degree of risk and trade-off. There's no such thing as zero risk or no trade-offs. But the CFPB is kind of trying to take the position that it can determine for a population of 300 million what the best type of financial product and service ought to be. And, it's no wonder then that we get the degree of politics that we have in this issue, because it's directly proportionate to the amount of power that's at stake. I don't think we would be seeing this level of partisan fighting if this was a sensible amount of regulation.
On Point listeners, do you think that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will protect you? Let's hear from another listener. Beth is calling from Schenectady, New York. Hi, Beth. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, this is what I'd heard, that it is far too weak, and the stepchild to other regulatory committees to ever do any good anyway. So it feels very much like it's taking our money again, but because it's not autonomous, it's not going to be able to do anything. So it's just shocking. It just looks, it's the same old, same old. It's too corrupt, and it's toothless. So that's my thoughts on the matter.
All right. Let's hear from Ed Mirzwinski. Ed, the consumer the CFPB with teeth or without teeth?
Well, I think if the Senate opponents have their way, it will become toothless. But right now, it's our best chance to protect consumers across the financial marketplace. It's independent. It doesn't have to go begging to Congress for money. And it has the ability to stop unfair practices. Daniel Douglas mentioned a $425 million that's been returned because three big credit card companies were deceiving and cheating their customers. And that sent a strong message to all the rest of the credit card companies, you better stop cheating and deceiving your customers too. And the CFPB didn't keep that money. It ordered the credit card companies to give it to the public. The CFPB is going after the worst non-bank practices, including ripping off military families and veterans. It's a story that many people are not aware of, but the financial industry targets low-paid military families for the worst rip-off products. CFPB has a special program on that, special program on seniors, special program on teaching people financial literacy. But they've also got to shorten those 45-page contracts that you sign automatically whenever you get a credit card and are stuck with.
They're doing it. The debate rages with On Point listeners over this agency, whether it should exist or should not exist, or whether it has power or too much power or not enough. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Let's hear from a few more listeners. Paul is calling from Newton, Mass. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Bob. You know, I had worked for the FDIC for 15 years. I'm an attorney. And when I retired, I was amazed over that whole term of the amount of rip-offs and scams that banks have perpetrated on their customers. Now, the Heritage Foundation has a political agenda. I can tell you from what I've seen, we need the CFPB. It needs to have more powers. All the smokescreen about, you know, how long the regulations are, how it's going to affect good bankers, that's all smokescreen. You really need these powers because people are not capable of dealing with a predatory lender or a predatory merchant who tries to pull stuff over of them on them.
Diane Katz, Paul from Newton, Massachusetts, says you've got the smoke machine running.
Well, I don't smoke. What my interest here is in getting the most effective, efficient consumer protections that don't undermine competition, the availability of products and services, people's options, cost, and so on. But that's not what we've got going on here. And to the extent that we misidentify the problem and ignore the real causes, you know, we're going to have more harm than benefit.
All right, let's try and squeeze in one more call from the other side if we can. Eric is on the line from Boston, Mass. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me. And I agree that it's not a matter of the CFPB having too much authority. It's a matter of them applying the authority to help the actual homeowners and the individuals. You know, 61,000 through NACA alone files were sent to CFPB, and they said, we don't have the authority to do the right thing and modify these, even though in the servicers' waterfalls, modifications were available. So, you know, and Senator Warren went after CFPB to ask the question, a very good question, have you sued any of the banks? We know you're suing the homeowners. Have you sued any of the banks for not doing the right thing out there, for not having it together? So my question to the panel is, you know, what are your thoughts on the CFP using the authority in the appropriate way?
Ed Mirzwinski, why don't you start with that, if you don't mind. Why haven't the federal authorities, including the Bureau, gone after the big boys yet following the financial crisis?
Well, I think that one of the big problems following up on the financial crisis has been a frustration homeowners have and the American public, the taxpayers have, that there needs to be a much more aggressive stance towards the companies that caused the foreclosure crisis, the companies that caused the collapse of the economy. Much more needs to be done. The CFPB
Should the Bureau do that?
The Bureau should absolutely be doing that, but it's not only on the Bureau. It's on all of the government financial and housing agencies, including the Department of Justice, the federal housing authorities, and other organizations in the government, to go after the bad guys, to get money back. And most importantly, the CFPB has issued a rule, however, to try to keep people in their homes. We need to hold the companies that caused the crisis accountable, and we need to do a better job keeping people in their homes. The caller's right to be frustrated.
That if I could.
Go ahead, Diane Katz.
Sure. I'm not sure where people are getting the idea that the so-called big boys haven't been gone after. In fact, there's been, you know, agreements for, you know, paybacks of about $26 billion at this point. But the larger point is that The reason many of these larger institutions got away with taking, unnecessary or, bad risk is because they had the government insuring, that is, taxpayers insuring much of their activity. This Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the Dodd-Frank Act do nothing to do away with taxpayers being on the hook for what the big banks do. And so, to the extent that we're paying so much attention to these sort of marginal, financial products and services while ignoring what the real problem is, means that taxpayers are going to continue to be on the hook for risks taken by these big banks.
I just have a few seconds left, but I want each of you to respond to this. Is this agency going to survive this political and legal battle? Ed Mierzynski, you first.
I think it will. I think the uncertainty that the opponents of the Bureau are promoting hurts the banking system and hurts consumers, and they will ultimately give up.
And Diane Katz.
I'm hoping for a better system.
Ed and Diane, thank you very much for joining us today. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point Radio podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Bob Oakes, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.